You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
This is MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz, joined by Jordan Bastian. Talking Tribe here in the aftermath of Ohio State's big victory in the national championship game, and that has some Indians ties. I'm sure Bart Swain, PR man for the Tribe, was quite excited for that. And Nick Swisher, especially, the Buckeyes alum who always incorporates the OHIO into his home run trot. JB, have we heard from Nick Swisher the day after the big game? I know he was tweeting some stuff after the game, but the next day he wasn't arrested for streaking or anything, right?
I haven't heard any updates on Swish. He was pretty quiet. What I thought was funny is he was just totally silent on social media during the game. He waited until it was totally settled before he put his celebratory tweets out there. You know, I can't imagine, when we get around him in spring, how often we're going to have to hear about this, especially me being a Michigan State alum. I know he's probably going to, bring that up a couple times. So that's good. Hey, even as a Sparty fan, I can appreciate a solid, incredible storybook season. Their third-string quarterback has three wins with a Big Ten game, the first playoff, and then the title. It's pretty cool. I mean, that's pretty good for the state of Ohio, which has endured its share of misery along the way.
Amen to that. And, just goes to show what a strong core can do, and that's what the Indians rely on. I don't know if that's much of a transition, but there's a transition for you. Back to Swish now. I mentioned, streaking in the street, and actually I don't think he's physically capable of that at the moment. I know he hasn't gotten into the running program just yet. Sounds like that could happen soon. Probably get reevaluated during the time of Tribe Fest as far as where he's at, physically. But what's the latest on Swish? And I guess outlook, as we're about a month away here from pitchers and catchers reporting.
I think you hit on a lot of the key points right now, which is, really right now, we don't know so as much as, the Indians have put out, which is, that they're going to have a follow-up exam with him during Tribe Fest, and they can kind of get him in person, and instead of relying on, phone calls and text messages and things like that. So I think it'll be good for reporters to get around him and also good for the team to get around him. And, you can kind of evaluate. He's not going to be running up and down the tunnel for us to see how he's looking, but, I think it'll be a good evaluation for the Indians, and we'll kind of know heading into spring, is he behind, is he ahead? I'm anticipating he'll probably be, on schedule be maybe not as, where the rest of his teammates are at the beginning of the camp, maybe slightly behind, but he's got to get to that running program. But he's a guy that, if you remember in the past, he would kind of take it slow into the games anyway. So if he misses the first couple games, once you get to the game slate, I don't think that's going to be a huge deal for him. That's something that he's kind of an approach he's taken in the past anyway. So it'll be interesting. I think with him and Moss, the best-case scenario, obviously, is that they both open on the roster. But by acquiring Moss, and keeping some of these other guys in the fold, if they do break camp and one of those guys has to stay back and continue his rehab for a little while, if it lingers into the season, they've kind of built in some plans to hopefully, bridge that early April gap.
Yeah, and that's something we touched on in last week's podcast, and then I know Terry Francona elaborated on it in a talk with reporters last week. But, the Indians have done this before, and they know that, you go into spring training with one plan, you come out with another. The more options you have at your disposal, the better, because teams rarely come out of camp looking exactly the way they might have projected in January.
Yeah, you're right. And it's funny. I mean, we spend so much time in the off season and during spring training, projecting that opening day roster and the who's going to be number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the rotation. What's the lineup going to be? And it's during the course of a season that changes from day to day, especially the lineup. The rotation, once you get past the first 5 games, you start working in off days and things start getting a little messed up and then injuries happen. We put so much focus on that first 25-man roster that takes the field, but really on day 2 it can be completely different. you know, and obviously by the end of the year, it can be totally different. So, you know, that'll be, you know, I think right now they've put themselves in a good position depth-wise, you know, especially with a lot of the guys they have coming back. It's a quiet offseason, really, for the Indians, but, you know, a lot of that is because of, you know, the value they placed on their internal pieces over the last few off seasons, you know, locking up so many guys.
Well, one guy they locked up was Jason Kipnis, who was at that national championship game, by the way. Tweeted out a picture of himself with Jim Tressel. And I don't know about you, JB, but I like the tweeting out the picture of Jim Tressel a lot more than the gritty details of food poisoning that preceded those tweets about a week earlier.
Hey, that's what you get with Kip. You know, he's all out there on Twitter.
He's had quite an off season, not just because of the food poisoning, but also the damaged finger tendon that required surgery, and that, of course, coming off of a really tough 2014, where the oblique injury that seemed to linger for him and affected him on the field. Terry Francona says he expects this guy to come back with a vengeance. What do you expect from Kipnis in the new year here?
You know, just knowing Kipnis, and he kind of took some things personally. You know, there were things written, you know, about his physical condition in spring training and last season, and I know that obviously struck a nerve with him. You know, there was the oblique injury that came up, and then, you know, obviously you can look at the statistics, and, you know, we write, you know, what he was doing, and, you know, he wasn't hitting for power. And, you know, I know he's the type of guy where that stuff would get under his skin in the positive way of, you know, he's going to come into camp with a chip on his shoulder, even with this finger injury that's happened this offseason. So, you know, I expect him to be extremely motivated. He's a guy that likes to prove people wrong. He's done it in the past in his career, and, you know, I think he's looking to do that this year, and that would be huge for the Indians. They need him. I mean, Francona came out and said that exact line. We need him, you know, and he knows that. And I think really when you looked at the offense down the stretch last year, and kind of as the pitching staff got so strong and the offense was kind of tapering off, you could really see that he was one of those the missing pieces that would have given that offense the type of boost, you know, the Indians could have used when they were trying to chase down the Royals for that wild card spot. So, you know, he's a big part of it. I don't anticipate this finger injury keeping him out of the opening day lineup. You know, they'll obviously be cautious with him in the spring. I think he'll be itching to get going and show everybody that last year was really just a health-hindered season.
You know, if Kip were to suffer any kind of setback, you know, God forbid, in spring training, it seems like Zach Walters is a guy who can, you know, potentially shore things up there in the short term. You think there's, as the roster looks right now, I think there's any role for Walters on the big league club, or is he more of a depth guy at this point? What's the outlook for him going into the year?
Man, I think I wrote it in the last inbox. I think he's one of the most intriguing players as we go into camp because,
yeah,
you know, what the Indians see is potentially, you know, not to, you know, heighten the expectations, but almost like a Ben Zobrist type player, you know, where he can bounce around a couple different key spots on the field, you know, you switch hits, and I mean, Francona loves that type of player, and so you could see when they got Walters, they immediately put him in the lineup and said, "Let's see what we got." And I think they're going to, this spring, probably bounce him around at different positions and, yeah, work him out at second base, you know, in the event that, you know, that's the contingency plan for Kipnis, because, you know, Jose Ramirez is kind of cemented there at shortstop right now. I don't think they want to move him off there, you know, with the strides he made and the plus defense that he presented for that team that needed it down the stretch. So Walters will be really interesting. Right now, I don't really see a fit if everybody comes back healthy, unless Tito goes with a 7-man bullpen, which is like, you know, that's what Francona likes to do.
That'd be very un-Tito-like.
But if he goes with the 8-man pen, I just don't see a spot. If he sticks with a 7-man bullpen, I could see him there as a super utility type guy. The other guy that factors into this too is Ryan Rayburn, you know, who is that versus lefties platoon corner outfield player that's also coming back from knee surgery. He's another guy that they say he's doing great right now in his rehab and he's feeling strong, but that's another guy during spring you're going to have to monitor and see how he's doing, how he's looking. And, you know, maybe if there's a setback there, you also look at, well, that's a spot on the bench that maybe opens up for Walters. But if it's going to be a spot on the bench, there's also that argument of maybe Walters can benefit from playing every day and developing, as we saw.
Right.
The power came in bunches, but, you know, the hits didn't necessarily come in bunches.
Yeah. And kind of the underrated change that's going on with the Indians going in this year is the change of bullpen coach. Kevin Cash was so such a valuable member of Francona's staff and just so beloved by these players. They love playing for this guy. He's so prepared and so great to work with. He, of course, gets the managerial opportunity he deserves in Tampa Bay. And the Indians replace him with Jason Barre, who former pitcher for them, of course, but also has remained in the organization in various capacities in recent seasons, and especially in spring training, you know, been there as a special assistant over the years. So what does Francona think about what Barre brings to the table, JB?
He was pretty excited. It reminded me of, you know, when they hired Callaway. Granted, Callaway was a little bit more of an unknown when they hired him. But, you know, the way that they raved about him and just the fact that he has been in the organization for a long time. I didn't realize how long Barre had been in the organization. Sometimes those special assistants, they're not really on your radar in terms of the staff. I mean, you see them in spring and you see them around the clubhouse every once in a while. I mean, he's been working in the front office side or evaluation side for a decade. You know, so this is a guy who knows
as long as I can remember,
Right, so he knows these pitchers who have come up in the system, and a lot of them who he's worked with over the years, you know, are reaching the big leagues now. And, you know, so I think that helps from a comfort level in a transition period with staff for a player to know that, okay, we lost Cash. I was really close with Cash. But, hey, it's going to be, you know, Barre, who's been here as well and has worked with me in the past as well. And I think maybe the fact that he was on the evaluation side at the same time Callaway was working his way up the minor league coaching ranks. You know, that relationship is already established. It's not like you have two coaches going in who have to learn each other's personalities and things like that. I think you're going in already with a duo that kind of already has that working relationship in place. So I don't think there's going to be much of a transition period. I think the players will be on board, you know, as valuable and fun as Cash was to have around. I think Barre will be, you know, it'll be a pretty seamless transition. What will be interesting is the fact that he has the pitching background and Cash had the catching background. I don't know what type of effect that could have, but Cash definitely brought a little bit different of a perspective to that coaching role, so that'll be interesting too.
Well, we know Jason Barre won't be working with Tyler Cloyd. Tyler gets mentioned on last week's podcast and immediately afterwards gets designated, gets removed from the tribe roster and ends up in Korea. So
yeah,
hopefully nobody else.
Careful what I mention from now on.
I know, yeah. Hopefully nobody else mentioned today ends up going that route. But we'll just have to wait and see. I want to thank Jordan Bastian for joining us. And I thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition.
Visit the official online shop of Major League Baseball at MLB.com/shop for the largest selection of authentic caps, t-shirts, jerseys, hoodies, collectibles, and more. Get your gear straight from the source, the MLB.com shop.